Hey, everybody. In a couple of weeks, I'm going to be in Edmonton, Canada, January 24th to the 26th, Friday, Saturday, Sunday at the Comic Strip Live Comedy Club. Go online, get some tickets. Edmonton, Canada, Comic Strip Live. I was just in Iowa and Des Moines. We had a blizzard. So what I'm doing in my career is I'm trying to move farther and farther north to the frigid temperatures of the world. So probably by July, I'll be headlining in the North Pole. But, you know, polar bears are big fans. Iowa was great. Thanks for coming out, everybody. We had a blizzard and people still came to the show. I lost a foot, but hey, what are you going to do? It's comedy. No, it was a great weekend. Thanks, everybody, for coming out. And also, hope you guys can make it out to see me in Edmonton. And my guest this week is Josh Hartnett, great actor. Been in some major, major movies and has worked with some really incredible directors and actors. You know, Brian De Palma, Ridley Scott, Michael Bay, and actors like Samuel L. Jackson, Scarlett Johansson, Ewan McGregor. It's just a really cool conversation with him about his career, his current film. So enjoy that. Hope you can come out to Edmonton. And if you don't live there, fly there. There's a mall. What's better than that? And please leave some comments on iTunes about the show. And always good to get some nice feedback on the podcast. And enjoy Josh Hartnett. Very excited to have my next guest on, a terrific actor we've seen in Pearl Harbor, Black Hawk Down, The Black Dahlia, The Faculty. He has a crime thriller out now in theaters and on VOD called Inherent the Viper. And my guest is Josh Hartnett. Hey, Josh, how are you? Nice to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, Paul. It's good to be here.
Absolutely. We were just talking off air. I thought I liked you, but I hate you because you're not on social media, and that's what I want to do, but I can't. So good for you, man.
Thanks, man. I just never got into it. I saw that it could become a trap, you know, that time suck. So I just decided to stay out of it.
It's totally what it is. And then you get in arguments with people on Twitter. Like I do comedy and political comedy. So I go on CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. And then you, God forbid, you say something that the viewer doesn't agree with. And they just get really hostile and nasty on Twitter. And then my wife's like, don't respond. And like, it just is... It's put us in a bad place, but I think you should make a bronze bust of yourself, and so when you pass away, there's this plaque that says this person was never on social media, and like put it in the Smithsonian next to the like Archie Bunker chair or something like that. Anyway,
I'll be the only one. It'll be the only way people can remember me.
So no, there'll be other things too.
From the digital atmosphere.
Yeah, exactly. So the movie is really cool. It's just a little bit of synopsis. Your character Kip is dealing opioids with your sister as is like really a source of survival, and then that sort of leads to you know some serious things happening. But what's the matter of survival that's going on there? Explain to folks a little bit what's happening there.
Well, they live in an economically depressed part of southern Ohio, where industry is sort of dried up in a major way recently, and what happened to the family is that their father lost his job and became a drug dealer, and they sort of inherited that when, hence the title, when they were young and their father went to prison. And my character, in order to escape it, got into the military and moved away. But when he came back, found that his sister was even deeper and more involved than when he'd left, and so has to sort of take part in it and become part of the problem, because in order to protect his family and to protect his younger brother, which he really wants to, if possible, give a chance to be outside of this world. But as you can probably guess, this part of the States is falling apart, that the opioid epidemic has played a major role in that, and that the town itself is decimated both by the drugs and by the economic instability. And our characters are dealing with that fallout. My character doesn't want to be in it anymore, wants to get, you know, the family out, save his little brother. My sister is saying this is our only opportunity. And so there's a lot of, it's a real tragedy. This film is a real tragedy. Something horrible happens, and everybody's forced to deal with it.
Is it, you know, it's a very timely subject matter, you know, in tying, talking about not just the opioid epidemic, and but, you know, sort of tying it to economic distress and all of that. And was it intentionally, was that one of the main reasons you wanted to make it, was sort of as a way to, because you seem to make at times movies that, you know, sort of speak to what's going on in a subtle, sophisticated way, not over your head, that doesn't hit, that don't hit you over the head, which I always really liked. Was that sort of part of the reason you wanted to do this project, was to kind of speak to this, which is literally going on as we speak?
It's definitely a reason that I was attracted to the project, but it's not like I sat down one day and said, I want to find a movie that highlights the issues of the opiate epidemic without hitting people over the head with the issue. It just came to me, this script. When I read it, I said, like, this is brilliantly put together, and it does exactly that. It gives you a story that brings you into the middle, the heart of the beast, as it were, and it shows you the devastation that's caused by this drug and the, you know, the politics surrounding it. But it doesn't directly deal with that story. And so my feeling when I watched the film finally was that I was drawn into the characters and into their fight for survival. But the poetry of it is that I was constantly aware of the devastation the drug was wreaking on the rest of the community and on the family itself. And that, you know, the over prescribing and the ability for this drug to take such a strong hold on average people's lives was in the frame at all times. And I really appreciated that the director, Anthony Chergen, was able to pull this off on such a small budget with such a short time to shoot, and that he was doing it without being overtly political. And I think that a lot of that has to do with the fact that he is he's Swiss national, and so he was looking at this film, I think, and the story from the purely the human tragedy of it, as opposed to a right or left issue.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. I think it ties to what we were talking about at the top of this about social media, and I actually talk about this in my act. It's like everybody in our country has an opinion about everything all the time. And sometimes, you know, you keep your opinion to yourself, and it's hard not to make things a black and white right or left issue in this country. So you're probably right. I mean, it would have been a lot harder for a lot of American directors maybe to kind of stay away from that tendency and where you can have sort of a more objective conversation about something, which is really important, you know?
I hate that there's a lack of nuance in our conversation. Yeah. Like the world is not black and white. The world is a very gray place. And issues like this should not be politicized as overtly as they have been. It's a human issue.
Yeah. Nuance is a great word. That's exactly what I say myself. And, you know, like, there's just, it's, you know, you, and if God, if you disagree with a person on the other side of an issue, even on one particular issue, then you're the bad guy regarding all issues. Like there's no gray area, and really that's where life is. And, you know, you've worked with, you talked about the director, and you've worked with some amazing directors, you know, Brian De Palma and Ridley Scott, Michael Bay, Robert Rodriguez. I imagine from every director you take some experience away, each experience, and same with actors. You worked with some incredible actors. You take away something that helps you as an actor or as a person, or maybe both. Is there anything that, you know, that you've taken away from working with some of these folks, including on the current project, that has really stuck with you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm shooting with Guy Ritchie right now, and before this, I did something with John Lee Hancock, both very talented, very different directors. Mm-hmm. And and I've been very lucky to work with all sorts of great directors over the course of my career, from Sofia Coppola, Robert Rodriguez, to Atsuko Hiranagi, who did this movie called Oh Lucy a couple of years ago that I was in. And what I learned from each of them is a lot of different things. But the overall thing that I've learned is that, like, no matter what, no one's going to hand you a movie. No one's going to hand you success. And even if you're Ridley Scott, if you're Robert Rodriguez, no one's going to make it easy for you to make the thing that you want to make. It is something that you have to fight tooth and nail to do. And so I've learned from every one of these directors that you have to stick to your guns and you have to do the thing the way that you want to do it. And it has to, and it's going to take a lot more effort than you expect from the, at the beginning. And you just have to, stick with it. Obviously I've learned lots of other lessons, but that's the overarching thing that I've learned is that everybody has to work really hard to make these things happen.
You're right. And I mean, but you mean it's a little eye opening. You're talking about even people at your level and Brian De Palma's of the world and Michael Bay, that even at that level, it's a fight, for lack of a better term, to see your vision made, even for people that that's with that stature and that amount of power, huh?
I think so. I mean, like from what I see, there are movies that I've heard, because I've known Ridley Scott for 20 years now, almost. And over the course of our friendship, after working together, we've gone out to dinner where he's talked about a project that he wants to put together. And then like a couple of years later, we'll go to dinner again and he'll be, what happened to that thing that you were talking about? He's like, we couldn't get the financing for it. We couldn't get the money together the way that we wanted to. Now, Ridley might be wanting more money than most to make that film, but still, he doesn't get what he wants all the time. And he's been, he's a legend. He's been doing great, masterful films that make tons of money for the last 40 years. And it's a Wild West. And there's always somebody new coming along who's going to change the nature of the film industry. And you have to keep on your toes and you have to keep working hard. Otherwise you lose touch.
Yeah, no, I can appreciate that. It's just shocking. I feel a little better. I'm trying to raise money right now. PBS would like to, the public broadcast system would like to do a one-on-one talk show with me. And I got to raise the underwriting because unfortunately all their funding has been cut over the years by different administrations. And so I'm starting to knock on those doors and you got a great project and the network is calling me up going, we're ready to put this on in 2020. Oh, do you have it together yet? The money. And like, I've never had a network call me up and say, we're ready to put your show on the air. And I'm like, I'm knocking on the doors, sit tight. And like, It's a fight, man. It's a push, you you got a great project and people like it's, you get a lot of no's and you got to work through it, as you said, I guess, but we'll get there.
Well,
hopefully.
That's the good news though, too. You get a lot of no's, but all you need is one yes.
Yeah.
I mean, really, you just need one person to be like, yes, that's the thing I want to do. And I want to do it the way that you want to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
I got to tell you, I was always familiar with your work, but in researching you for this interview, I really got to know you more, and I really respect your integrity and your artistic integrity. In that, with all your success, you took a significant break from acting, and read something to the effect that I wanted to spend a bit of time really thinking about whether this was the right thing for me. What was it that pushed you to take a break? What was not sitting right with you, and why did you decide to come back to it after that?
Well, back in you're referring to 2001, and it was a really strange time, obviously, in America and in my life, particularly because I had a bunch of big movies come out that year, and I had been living in New York and in Minneapolis, where I grew up, and I had been working a lot out of Los Angeles, but I wanted to be around people who I knew and who knew me well, because I had Pearl Harbor had come out that year, and the lead up to that with all the press had sort of turned what was sort of being a well-known actor into being sort of, I couldn't go anywhere without people coming up to me. And I was 21 years old at the time. And I just thought I had turned 22 actually. And I thought I needed some breath to sort of see what I was, and I had been working constantly since I started. I made my first film and first TV show when I was 18. And I I didn't stop working until after I'd finished Black Hawk Down, which was in the summer of 2001. And I just needed to assess, needed to figure out what direction I wanted to go with my life. And I also had always had this nagging sensation that I wanted to go to visual arts school. Essentially, I'd always wanted to be a painter, but I'd been writing all my life as well. And I wanted to see if I could do anything else. And yeah. I thought, okay, now I've afforded myself this space to go to try this thing, because basically acting had already happened to me. It wasn't like I'd gone out and pursued it. It was, I wanted to see if I could make something of myself. So I wrote a screenplay in that time, and we sold that to DreamWorks, and it never got produced, but we did write it. And it was, you know, a very, it proved something in my mind that I was worthy beyond just somebody else's being somebody else's tool in their film. And then obviously, you know, in 2001, 9/11 happened only a couple months after. I decided to take some time off, and a lot of my friends were living down in that area. I lived down in that area in Tribeca, and a lot of things changed politically and emotionally at the time. And I was more interested in being close to my people than I was into chasing the brass ring at that moment. And and then, you know, honestly, the thing that brought me back was someone offered me a movie with Harrison Ford in it. I wanted to work with Harrison Ford.
That's great.
He's been a lifelong idol of mine. And I just really couldn't pass up that opportunity.
Yeah. Well, that's good for you. I'm sure that that journey's helped. And I totally get sort of stepping back and taking a breath. It's always a good thing, no matter where you are in your career and what age. I'd love to talk to you more. I know we got to kind of wrap this up. So great movie out now, Inherent the Viper, in theaters and on VOD. And of course, a great body of work, and really terrific to have you on, and great to get to know you a bit. And good luck with everything, Josh.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
All right, there you go. That's Josh. Really great guy. And in researching him, like I said, sort of really, you know, I found a lot of interesting stuff about him that I didn't know, including him stepping away from acting for a while. I give him a lot of credit for that. Again, I'll be in Edmonton, Canada, January 24th, 25th, 26th, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Come on out, check out a show at the Comic Strip Live Comedy Club. Hope you can make it. Please leave some nice comments on iTunes about the podcast, and enjoy your week, everybody.